Good afternoon. My name is Susan Muirhead, and today I'll be reading part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, April 29th, 2025. Let's begin with today's top stories. The first headline reads, From Bob Asmussen, a salute to St. Paul Lutheran, singing their praises. Music will flow as Sidoras Church celebrates special anniversary. This is based out of Sidoras. Ask what makes St. Paul Lutheran Church special, and Jan Fisher, J-A-N, last name Fisher, F-I-S-H-E-R, quickly answers, the people, like Evelyn Karcher. The 93-year-old has been a member her entire life. Through the Great Depression, World War II, and COVID-19. She remembers when the original church was lost to a fire and replaced by the current structure at 101 East Church Street. Our grandparents sure knew how to build to last. On Sunday, the St. Paul congregation celebrates its 150th anniversary with a divine service at 10:45 a.m. Former church minister Stephen Albers will return to co-preach that day with vacancy minister Michael Storger. Storger has been filling in at the church for a year and a half. There will be singing at the special service. Lots and lots of singing. This congregation sings, Fisher said. You hear them. The church started a choir in the 1950s. One of the original members, Bev Merriam, is returning. She currently lives in Monticello. All choir members over the years, are encouraged to attend. Following the service, there will be a catered luncheon with 200 expected to attend. An afternoon slideshow is part of the program. Past members of the congregation are traveling from Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Tennessee, and the Chicagoland area. How does Karcher feel about the church milestone? I'm really proud that we have had a vibrant congregation for that many years, she said. I was baptized and confirmed and married in the church. She later spent 2 decades as the secretary for the church. Evelyn and her late husband Alfred were married almost 70 years. Their children, Vicky, Tim, and Lisa, were baptized and confirmed at St. Paul. Evelyn's family, the Messmans, has lived on the same farm for 150 years. It is 1.5 miles from St. Paul. They were all members of the church, she said. Starting point. In April 2024, the church formed an anniversary committee to plan the celebration. Fisher led the group. She's a retired music teacher at Champaign's Kenwood Elementary. At St. Paul, Fisher was the music director for more than 40 years. Now 84, Unity High School graduate Fisher remains active in the church and runs the handbell choir. The handbells will be part of the special service, which will also include a trumpet player and the church organist. Fisher joined the church in 1975. She and husband John have been married 64 years. For decades, Fisher directed the Living Christmas Tree performances at the church. That built the choir, Fisher said. Beth Lindstedt is a part of the anniversary committee. She was baptized and confirmed at St. Paul. This was my home church, Lindstedt said. Lindstedt, who grew up in Tolono, is a teacher at Tuscola's North Ward Elementary. She has been there since 1999 and taught 35 years total. The St. Paul congregation includes people from Mahomet, Tolono, Philo, Monticello, Ivesdale, Bement, and Sidoras. It's a friendly, welcoming church. If you walk in and you're not there, people are going to know who you are within the first 10 to 15 minutes because somebody is going to come ask who are and why you're there and welcome you in, Lindstedt said. Looking back, when St. Paul celebrated its 100th anniversary in the 1970s, the late Ken Rawling, he passed away in November at the age of 99, put together a history of the church. Their work will be part of Sunday's slideshow with photos from over the years. The church faced financial hardships like everyone else, during the Depression. The then-pastor took a significant pay cut in 1932. The economy began to turn later in the decade, allowing the church to be on the positive side of the balance sheet in 1939. The history celebrates famous St. Paul members, including Dottie Schroeder, a star baseball player, and one of the inspirations for the hit film, A League of Their Own. Bob Asmussen is a college football reporter and columnist for the News Gazette. He can be reached by phone or email. His phone number is 217-393-8248. That's 217-393-8248. Or Asmussen, A-S-M-U-S-S-E-N, at newsgazette.com. And there's a few photos that accompany this article. One is of a large group. Looks like, well, there's men in the back, mostly females. There's about three rows of about eight people standing at the head of the church, it looks like. The caption reads, "Members of a special 150th anniversary choir at St. Paul Lutheran in Sedaris, ahead of Sunday celebration." That photo was taken by Jim Rosso of the News Gazette. There's also a picture of kind of the same group as they're singing and performing. That caption reads, "Members of a special 150th anniversary choir, comprised of past and current church members, practice at St. Paul Lutheran in Sedaris." Carrie Rosso took that photo. That's K-E-R-R-Y Rosso. And there's one more of the exterior of the church, also taken by Carrie on a sunny day. It's a nice, lovely kind of brownish brick church. So congrats on their anniversary. Next up, Unit 4 Schools, Do Your Job. There is a large room full of people sitting and clapping. That's the caption. The caption for the photo is, "Attendees at Monday night's canceled Champaign School Board meeting applaud as Minnie Pearson of the NAACP finishes speaking before the standing room only crowd at the district's Mellon building. Pearson was one of 21 people who stepped to the microphone to voice support for two administrators whose appointments are being held up by no-show board members." There's more coverage in the A section of the paper. We'll get to that shortly. That photo is taken by Robin Scholes of the News Gazette. Next up, Christie Klinik, Illinois Race Weekend. He's always been wanting to run. This article is written by Joey Wright and is based out of Champaign. Nearly 11,000 runners weaved their way through the streets of Champaign, Urbana, and Savoy on April 26th. This was last weekend. Most of those who competed in the Christie Klinik Illinois Race Weekend's myriad offerings were humans. Chex, C-H-E-X, a 10-year-old dog resembling a treeing walker coonhound, was the exception. "He's always been wanting to run, that's for sure," his owner, Ed Weiskamp, said. "Anytime he's jumped the fence or gotten away from us, we never could catch him. We've always had to wait for some Good Samaritan to call us in a few hours." Chex initially watched from the window of the Weiskamp household on Race Street in Urbana as runners crossed by within the few miles of the finish line at Memorial Stadium. But after being let onto the porch and getting a compliment from a passing runner, his race was on. "That's all he needed," Weiskamp said. "He went over the railing like a deer and off he went. He was happy as he could be." The dog covered nearly 3 miles, according to organizers' estimations, before crossing the finish line himself. Fortunately, Ed's daughter, Viola, completed the 5K herself in 1:02:24. "It worked out great," Weiskamp said. "He got there way ahead of her, but when she got there, she could bring him back home again." Race officials are working to honor their own canine competitor. "We are hoping this week to award Chex with a medal," race director Jan Seeley said. "We don't encourage dogs, and there's bandits, but he was an innocent bandit. It was kind of fun. It gave some people some exciting things to talk about." Chex lived up to the billing of a bandit. One who competes, in an event around or without signing up for it with his post-race celebration. He celebrated by eating a loaf of bread as soon as he got home while we weren't looking, Weisskamp said. He had a big day all the way around, really. And there's two photos. One is of Czech on the football field. Czech crosses the finish line on Saturday. That photo was taken by Jack Dalby of the News Gazette. And yeah, that was the photo. So now let's head inside Section A. First up, top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Congratulations to the Champaign County Radio Control Club, recipient of Champaign American Legion Post 24's monthly award for proper display of the American flag. Old Glory waves in the wind near the building, strip at 3616 West Bloomington Road, where the 74-year-old club is about to kick off a busy, warm-weather stretch of events. It starts with a tribute to past club president Mike Trautman, who died in March after battling cancer. The Mike Trautman Memorial fly-in is May 17th. And that's Mike, last name Trautman, T-R-A-U-T-M-A-N. He was just a wonderful, wonderful man, said President Bill Spencer, citing his unwavering dedication and commitment. He was always generous with his time, sharing his vast knowledge and experience with members both young and old. With just under 100 members, the club is making a push for more. Spencer said anyone's welcome to visit during flying sessions at 5 p.m. Thursdays from mid-May to mid-September. Information is online at CCRCC. That's ccrcc.club. Have a flag display to nominate? You can reach out to Post 24's Chuck Zielinski at 217-356-5114. That's 217-356-5114. Or you can email al24champagne. @gmail.com. May's winner will be announced during Ann Roten's Standard Time program on WDWS 1400 AM, 93.9 FM. Tune in at 7:15 AM Sunday. And there's a photo of three men. One is holding a kind of a plaque or a certificate. They're standing outside of a business, the Champaign Course Rapid Control Center, or Control Club. And the caption reads, Bill Spencer, Dan Irwan, and Max Overmeyer of the Champaign County Radio Control Club. That is courtesy of Chuck Zielinski. Questions, comments, suggestions, you can always email at Jim Rosso at JROSSOW at newsgazette.com. Now, a look back. History. Area history. In 1925, 11-year-old Clarice Ashby of Champaign and 18-year-old William Welsh of Urbana, who disappeared Monday, were found in Chicago, and Detective Morton Myers brought them back, the boy to face charges of abduction and the girl to receive attention from juvenile court officials. She may be sent back to Marquette School under probation. In 1975, University of Illinois freshman Allison Campbell died from multiple traumatic injuries after being found partially clothed at the base of a stairwell in the psychology building. In 2010, a day before the second Christie Clinic Illinois Marathon, race organizers said there were 14,286 registered runners in the marathon. Half marathon, 5K, and youth run. That was 2010 with 14,286 runners. In international history, today's highlight. On April 29th, 1992, a jury in Simi Valley, California, acquitted four Los Angeles police officers charged with assault and using excessive force in the videotaped beating of motorist Rodney King. The verdicts were followed by 6 days of rioting in Los Angeles, which destroyed hundreds of businesses and resulted in over 60 deaths. Also on this date, in 1916, the Easter Rising in Dublin collapsed as Irish nationalists surrendered to British forces. In 1945, during World War II, American soldiers liberated the Dachau concentration camp. In 1991, a powerful tropical cyclone made landfall in Bangladesh, creating a storm surge that resulted in more than 138,000 deaths. That's 1991 in Bangladesh. In 1997, the Chemical Weapons Convention, a worldwide treaty barring the use of chemical weapons and mandating the destruction of existing chemical weapons, went into effect. That's 1997. In 2008, Democratic presidential hopeful Barack Obama denounced his former pastor, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright, for what he termed divisive and destructive remarks on race. And in 2011, Britain's Prince William and Kate Middleton were married in an opulent ceremony at London's Westminster Abbey. That's 2011. The next headline reads, anonymous donation gives soybean lab second chance. And this is, just one moment, Soybean Innovation Lab. This article is written by Jana Wiersema, who can be reached at jwiersema@newsgazette.com. This article is based out of Urbana. In February, Soybean Innovation Lab director Peter Goldsmith took to social media to share news of how the lab was likely to close in April amid cuts to the U.S. Agency for International Development. His words did not fall on deaf ears. A company based in Europe reached out later that month to learn about 10 days ago, that same business wired a little over $1 million in funds to the University of Illinois Foundation to support the lab, which is focused on opening new markets for soybeans internationally. It's pretty much a miracle, Goldsmith said. He had previously cobbled together funding from the university to keep the lab afloat until April 15th, which was to be its last day, said officials from the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. At the 11th hour, Founders Pledge, a global nonprofit empowering entrepreneurs to do the most good possible with their charitable giving, announced a $1.2 million gift from an anonymous donor to fund the lab and core staff for another year. The Soybean Innovation Lab was previously funded by USAID's Feed the Future Innovation Labs program. It is operated in partnership with the University of Illinois and located on campus in Urbana. ACE's officials noted that while durable federal investments are needed to support the previous scale of the lab's work, the gift will allow the program to finish some of its most important efforts and provide more time to seek reliable funding sources for the future. Goldsmith said that the donation will support 8 employees, including himself, compared to a previous staff of 30. It also means that the lab's scope of work will be narrowed for the time being. We were working in 30 countries, Goldsmith said. We were all over. Our technology was demanded by a lot of folks, so we were pretty active, but this gift allows us to deliver very specifically over the next year in a very targeted area. He said the funds will be used to restart the lab's project to bring soybeans to the Lower Shire Valley of southern Malawi in Africa. SIL, Soybean Innovation Labs, SIL's efforts were strategically positioned to expedite the registration of new varieties for both rainy season and dry season production, an advancement that would mark a significant milestone in Malawian agriculture, said Bruce Carruthers, who consults for Agricane in southern Malawi. He added that if the lab were no longer involved, this would have delayed the timeline for when improved genetic material could be introduced into the market. Goldsmith noted that the lab recently just finished its first year of helping the region transition to soybeans, so it won't be starting from scratch on this work. However, he said that while the lab is grateful for the gift, the $1 million is really the bare minimum. The lab's previous annual budget was about $3.5 million and allowed for a broader geographic scope and a complete suite of services and technologies, he told the News Gazette. We were kind of a major force as per USAID mandate to really, what they call, move the needle, really affect things, he said. This is a targeted and much more limited and will be very successful, but at a much smaller scale. Goldsmith isn't sure where the lab and its staff might find additional funding to continue past a single year, but he said that they have begun discussions with other parties and the gift gives them time to explore these opportunities. Unfortunately, it's his understanding that there isn't a lot of appetite out there for the kind of high-risk, low-immediate-return work that the lab specializes in terms of de-risking new markets for the private sector. So SIL will adapt and will become more focused on delivery in the short term, and some of those large bets that we were placing and working on, there isn't funding for that, he said. There isn't an appetite for that. So it's a huge gap when USAID left, but more in general, a huge gap is left when US government leaves the science space, the public-led research space. More information, along with a link to donate to the Soybean Innovation Lab, is available at aces.illinois.edu/news. That's aces.illinois.edu/news. And there's a photo that accompanies this article. It's of two men standing in front of a sign, and behind them is a large field of soybeans growing. The caption reads, Soybean Innovation Lab Director Peter Goldsmith, who stands at the left, visits Pan-African soybean trials in Malawi. The next headline reads, Champaign County Court, CUPHD versus SUI, ruling coming soon. That's S-O-O-I-E, ruling coming soon. Judge says both parties have made mistakes throughout their dispute. This article is written by Jana Wiersema and is based out of Champaign. Champaign County Judge Jason Baum, B-O-H-M, hopes to issue a ruling on a lawsuit involving Sooie Brothers Barbecue Joint, that's S-O-O-I-E, Brothers Barbecue Joint, co-owner Alvin Allison, and the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, that's CUPHD, by the end of this week. However, it won't be an easy case to decide. There's no question in my mind that from Mr. Allison's perspective, public health is a heavy-handed bureaucracy. There's no question, though, from CUPHD's perspective that Allison's a hard-headed businessman, Baum said at a Monday morning court hearing. And the problem for me is, while there might be aspects of truth in both sides of those perspectives, I have to come to a singular conclusion. I can't compromise with both parties. The public health district ordered Sooie Brothers to close in late February, citing a lack of refrigeration due to the walk-in cooler not being in operation. However, Allison and co-owner Isis Griffin have argued that the order is unfair and that their commercial refrigerator exceeds the necessary requirements for reducing temperatures. Sooie Brothers initially refused to close, but eventually shut its doors on March 12th after Baum approved the health district's request for a temporary restraining order. He said at the time that Sooie Brothers first needed to go through the health district's administrative appeal process before the matter would fall under the court's jurisdiction. That process wrapped up April 16th, with the Board of Health denying Allison's appeal of his business's suspended food license. Now that we're in the administrative review, I can affirm in part, or reverse in part, the decision, Baum said. He said that the arguments presented at Monday's hearing are somewhat frustrating and indicated that both sides have made mistakes throughout the process. For instance, he noted that the health district alleged in its legal complaint that the restaurant was required to use a walk-in cooler pursuant to FDA Food Code 3501.14, but this is demonstrably false, quote-unquote. You can look at that section. The words walk-in cooler are nowhere to be found, Baum said. So that's where we got off the train, is by saying this section judge requires a walk-in cooler. That's nowhere to be found. You might say it requires effective methods, and we haven't been able to test the methods to determine if they are effective, and here they aren't. That's a different story, but to say the food code requires it is just not accurate. On the other hand, Baum noted that when Allison applied for a permit, he signed off on a section acknowledging that it was his responsibility to contact CUPHD before changing his equipment or process. The restaurant did not submit a new plan review application prior to the February 27th inspection and has not submitted one since, said Assistant State's Attorney Andrew Mueller. Mr. Allison's service plan review application, the terms of his permit submitted to CUPHD for the operation of his business, specifically indicates that he'll be using a walk-in cooler, he said. How are they supposed to evaluate that change in equipment if you don't let them know? Baum asked Allison. Baum added that one day after being ordered to close, Allison threatened to have health district staff arrested for trespassing if they tried to approach his restaurant. Allison replied that he had initially invited health district staff to examine his equipment, but they refused to do so unless he got the walk-in cooler repaired. I just want them to look at it objectively and just use the rules, he said. That's all I ever asked. He also said that he did not intentionally violate his previous agreement to notify the health district of changes and added that his current business model relies on flash freezing food rather than rapid cooling. I'm just saying, within less than 24 hours from the first inspection, we reached a boiling point very quickly, Baum said. And it just seems to me that we're now in a position where I have to pick a winner or a loser, basically a zero-sum game. The next headline reads, actually, it's a quick look at our weather forecast. So, today, 75. Mostly cloudy with a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms. West winds 15 to 20 miles per hour with gusts up to 30 miles per hour. Overnight, mostly cloudy, a 40% chance of showers, winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. Wednesday, the high will be 72, the low is 52. Just one moment. Yes, the low is 52. Thursday, the high is 73. The low is 62. Showers on Wednesday and Thursday as well. Friday, no rain. The high will be 68. The low is 53. Mostly sunny, a 30% chance of showers. So maybe slight rain. Saturday, by Saturday, the high will be 67. The low will be 43. And again, it will be mostly sunny. I'm Susan Muirhead, and this has been part one of the News Gazette, dated for this date, Tuesday, April 29th, 2025. I'll be back in a few minutes or a minute to read part two of the News Gazette, so please stay with me. Thank you very much for listening. It's always a pleasure to read with you. I hope you have a wonderful day.